From Arizona to New York, Oklahoma to Hawaii, this is American Radio Journal. On this edition, efforts to lower the rate of inflation have stalled. Will that mean a delay in the Fed lowering interest rates? Patrick Horan of the Mercatus Center at George Mason University is here with the answer. President Trump got to work on day one with a flurry of executive orders on everything from border security to ending woke government policies. Scott Parkinson from the Club for Growth has the real story. Among those executive orders were several designed to unleash America's energy potential. Eric Boehm of Reason Magazine gets details from Darren Bask of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And the Trump administration has removed the United States from the international minimum tax. Jonathan Williams from the American Legislative Exchange Council has an American Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to American Radio Journal. The drop in the inflation rate has stalled, calling into question what interest rate policies the Federal Reserve will implement as 2025 unfolds. Patrick Horan is a research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. He joins us now with analysis. Patrick, welcome back to American Radio Journal. Patrick, we have the latest numbers on inflation, both inflation generally and core inflation. Still not quite where we want to be. I want to give us an update on what the latest statistics show.
Earlier this month, we got the CPI data for December 2024. So CPI is Consumer Price Index, and that's probably the most popular inflation metric. So in December, the headline CPI, or the overall CPI, rose 2.9%, so very close to 3% from a year ago. And then the core number, the core inflation number, so that's when you subtract volatile food and energy, that was 3.2%, so a little bit above 3. So if you look at inflation, we saw inflation started to pick up in 2021. It really got high 2021, 2022. It's come down considerably, but it's still been, but the fall in inflation has slowed down. So it's kind of been, if you look at a graph, it would be moving sideways over the past several months. And the goal is to bring inflation down to 2. So inflation is still stubbornly a little bit high.
Donald Trump, of course, has made fighting inflation one of the key goals of his new administration here. It obviously played a big role in the election last November, Patrick. What steps can the federal government, aside from the Federal Reserve, what steps can the federal government actually take to try to bring inflation down? Or is it more a matter that they don't contribute to future spikes in inflation?
The path of inflation is ultimately going to be determined by how much demand there is in the economy, and demand is really determined by the Fed through its monetary policy. We can also say that fiscal policy also plays a role in how much demand there is, and then ideally the Fed should try to stabilize demand, but fiscal policy can play a role as well. So we saw very huge budget deficits. We saw a huge stimulus. I think that a lot of economists say that at least played some part in contributing to the inflation surge. So I think it is important for the federal government to try to keep budget deficits down to the extent they can, be fiscally disciplined to help keep inflation low. That's on the demand side, which is the main way to stabilize inflation. But there are things you can do on the supply side, too, to help bring down prices, particularly for important goods and services that are important to most Americans. Donald Trump has made housing affordability a big issue for him, and he has stressed the importance of boosting housing supply. He seems very interested in finding ways to make it easier to build housing, to kind of get rid of red tape that impedes housing construction. That would be one big way to help keep costs down or at least slow the growth in housing prices. So there are certain things you can do. You can also do deregulation in certain industries to help keep prices down there. So again, inflation is mostly determined on the demand side, but there are still things you can do on the supply side that could help. And that's where the Trump administration can play a big role.
I would assume that energy policy might also play a big role here, Patrick, because really you need energy at pretty much every step in the supply chain process.
Right, right. Energy, it's very important for fuel, and it's also an input into the production of many other goods. So that's another area where Donald Trump can kind of take on a pro-growth agenda, which should help alleviate prices.
Let's talk a little bit more now about the Federal Reserve. Of course, the Fed did cut interest rates last year a couple of times. There's been a lot of discussion. Did they cut too far? Did they cut too fast? Generally speaking, have their cuts had the desired effect, or is this something that still remains to be seen?
As you say, the Federal Reserve did cut a few times last year. So in total, they cut 100 basis points or one percentage point, and they did that in a few different steps. They were worried last summer, early fall, that labor markets might be weakening and that unemployment might be rising. So they were worried about the other part of their mandate. So they have a two-part mandate. They have to worry about inflation and they have to worry about unemployment. So they were worried about unemployment potentially rising and then perhaps and perhaps a recession coming. So they have done some cuts. And unemployment has stayed very low. So arguably those cuts may have helped with the labor markets. But that inflation has been stickier than they want to be. Inflation is still above their target. So I think they've cut a little bit too much. I think a couple cuts were warranted, perhaps more in the ballpark of 50 basis points, but 100 basis points was probably too much. And I think they implicitly agree that they cut too much because now they're backing off on some other interest rate hikes that they had promised for this upcoming year.
Taking a look at that, there was originally an expectation that there would be further cuts this year ahead. The signals coming out of the Fed, as you pointed out, starting to look like perhaps they might just stand pat for a while?
They've been kind of fuzzy about how many interest rate cuts they want to do. So they're meeting next week. They're almost certainly not going to cut next week. Markets are expecting not a cut at the next meeting either, which would be in March. They're thinking that perhaps the next cut will come in May, but it's still hard to tell this far in advance. As we get closer, we'd have a clearer idea if they're going to cut or not. Markets and the Fed itself are forecasting fewer cuts than they had been last year.
Relative to the markets here, Patrick, what sort of reaction have we had from the equity markets to both the cuts that have already been made and also future direction that the Fed might take?
Last year was a very good year for the stock market. It's been up almost 26% over the past year. It started to slow down, though, in November and December of last year, and that's when we were getting some more readings that, hey, inflation is actually a little bit higher than we thought it would be, and perhaps there won't be as many interest cuts going forward. So we saw a lot of growth last year, but then started to slow down toward the end of the year. Over the past
in terms
month,
of timing, the president,
the
of course, now
well
taking office. Is it typical
days,
that the cabinet secretaries aren't
kind of
all in place?
It's
going
not
forward.
Uncommon. I think there was a push this time to try to move things as quickly as possible, understanding the urgency, understanding that
there
because Donald Trump has already served one term
last year,
for years and
markets
is
are more optimistic
to accomplish many of his goals.
For the average American family sitting at home at the kitchen table trying to do budgeting, pay for the mortgage, the car, for groceries, sending kids to college, whatever. As we take all of these numbers and sort of,
we have been talking with Zach Smith,
who
is
senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. And
Zach, tell us a little bit about Heritage. Also, where folks can go. You've written on this and other topics. Where can folks find that?
The best that
sure,
we can hope
follow
for
me
that
on X,
maybe we're going to slow the rate of increase.
Smith,
it's hard to tell. I suspect slowing
the rate of increase. You can also go to heritage.org. See all of the great
is
stuff.
Much more doable than bringing overall prices
as well.
Down. I mean, I think
but
the price
of those
specific services like energy prices will go down with the growth agenda. That would be good. I think on the whole, the overall price level, I think it'd be more about slowing the growth rather than turning it down.
And
it's not very common that we actually see
Zach Smith of the Heritage Foundation. Zach, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate
inflation, which of course slowing inflation, but it's still positive. Now, I think if you have a lot of productivity, you can see deflation, and that would be good. I think realistically, we'd be looking at inflation slowing, going back down to 2, or probably not going below that.
We have been talking with Patrick Horan, who is a research fellow at the Mercatus Center, located at George Mason University. Patrick, tell us a little bit about the Mercatus Center. Also, where can folks go? You have written extensively on this topic. Where can they find your writings?
The Mercatus Center at George Mason University is a research institute based at George Mason University, and we work on a variety of policy issues to try to improve public policy in a free market direction, and you can find more about us at mercatus.org.
Patrick Horan of the Mercatus Center. Patrick, thank you for being back with us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. You say it's been a remarkable week in Washington, D.C. would be an understatement. We've witnessed the inauguration of the 47th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Scott, he got down to work real quick this time around, a flurry of executive orders. I know you've been charting the impact of those. Want to talk a bit about that?
Well, it's certainly been an exciting time in Washington as we had our Republican Congress and the House and Senate sworn in on January 3rd, and we've had some hearings on some of the important cabinet nominations. Marco Rubio, my former boss, got confirmed 99-0 to be Secretary of State. But on day one, President Trump signed numerous executive orders, really fulfilling a lot of the campaign promises that he's been talking about for months. And it really should not surprise people, but it's a big, big contrast to the vision of woke DEI alphabet soup sort of policies that the Biden administration was putting forward. Right at the beginning, Donald Trump issued executive orders doing things like designating the cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. He was ending DEI hiring practices in the federal government. He was reinstating the name of Mount McKinley and renaming the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. You know, we saw a lot of these pardons related to January 6th rioters. About 1,500 people were pardoned on day one. That was a big campaign promise. Still, I think six people that President Trump said he's continuing to research and make a determination on their status. We also saw some big executive orders declaring a national emergency related to the southern border, making sure that there's accountability for career senior executives, doing things like promoting beautiful federal civic architecture, right? Trump is tired of these office buildings that look like, you know, corporate boondoggles, and he wants to bring back beauty and architecture. It's kind of funny because that's right into his personality. We also saw him take steps to revoke birthright citizenship for people that are not U.S. citizens and are born in the United States. We also saw him really take a lot of things related to energy and natural resources to help combat the Bidenflation that has really been born by our energy crisis and independence in America. He's also making sure that we're putting the military down on the U.S. border. We've got big things like revoking security clearances for certain people that might not deserve it anymore. I think one big name was John Bolton. President Trump has withdrawn the United States from the World Health Organization. He delayed that TikTok ban by 75 days. A lot of young listeners out there, I think they're pretty excited about that because there's certainly an appetite for that social media. President Trump also backed the United States out of these big environmental agreements like the Paris Accord. He's trying to deliver emergency price relief to the American people, confronting higher costs when it comes to housing and increasing housing affordability and making sure that we have a bigger housing supply, eliminate administrative expenses and rent-seeking practices that increase healthcare costs. He's doing all sorts of things here that are going to really increase our ability to buy food and fuel. A big thing that has sort of sent shockwaves throughout Washington, Lohman, is that he has done an executive order issuing a hiring freeze on federal civilian employees. Of course, this doesn't apply to positions of national security and our military, but it will cause an overall reduction in the federal workforce through attrition, because you're also going to see a lot of Democrats that just have no interest in working for President Trump. And so we're going to see some of those positions go away. This is all, I think, a pretty good thing. We want to see a direct impact as, you know, there's sort of like a, I don't want to say a gridlock on Capitol Hill, but a prolonged negotiation when it comes to the reconciliation package and the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act extension, the Trump tax cuts from 2017. And then also, I think Trump is going to try to really beef up our border security through increased spending on the wall and agents and security and surveillance down there. One other thing that Trump did that's of note is a withdrawal from the OECD global tax deal. That deal forced a minimum 15% global tax rate, which ultimately hurts U.S. competitiveness and decreases growth. You might remember a specific provision from the 2017 tax cut was that we were going to institute a territorial tax system. So that basically means there's not going to be a double tax of an American corporate tax and, you know, a country, let's just say it's Germany's minimum tax. But Biden wanted to do that, right? And ultimately, that's going to cause higher prices for U.S. consumers. So watching Trump do a withdrawal from the OECD global minimum tax deal. That's a good thing that we're excited about. President Trump gave a remote speech to Davos, world leaders coming in there. I know that he's had a lot of direct conversations too. We saw the Prime Minister of Italy. We saw Javier Milei from Argentina. There are other senior diplomats that attended from, you know, places even like China. Trump has put out a statement directly to Vladimir Putin about ending the Ukraine war. There is a lot of action happening immediately. But one of the big hangups, I think, on Capitol Hill is the Democrats blocking many of the nominations that President Trump has made to his cabinet.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, tell us a little bit about the club.
The club is based out of Washington, D.C. We have over 525,000 members. And if you want to check us out at clubforgrowth.org, you can actually sign up and become a member for free. Also, follow us on X at Club for Growth.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, thank you much. We'll check in with you next week.
You are welcome.
The Biden administration handcuffed American energy development. With several strokes of a pen, President Trump has unshackled the industry. To learn more, Eric Boehm of Reason Magazine talks with Darren Bask of the Competitive Enterprise Institute.
It's been a head-spinning first few days of the Trump administration here in Washington, D.C. We've had a lot of executive orders, a lot of pardons, some of them quite controversial. But, you know, one thing that I don't think should be controversial at all is some of what the new president has done in the space of environmental and energy policy. Energy policy, most importantly, just to kind of open up and reopen, in some cases, the ability of America to produce more energy, which, of course, is good for anybody who uses electricity or puts gas in their car. And that is what we're going to take a closer look at today. Hi, folks. I'm Eric Boehm with Reason Magazine. Thanks for joining us on this edition of American Radio Journal. My guest today to talk with me about these new executive orders is Darren Bakst. He is a senior fellow and director of the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and a friend of the show. We love CEI's work here. Darren, thanks for taking some time and joining us.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here.
There's so much that's happened in just the first few days. It's only Wednesday here when we're recording this, but I feel like we've lived 3 weeks already since Donald Trump got inaugurated. What's really stood out to you from what the president has done in these first, let's say, 48 hours or so?
The extent of everything he's done is great. I think that stood out. He's certainly not being shy to try to undo the damage that the Biden administration has done. So he's gotten rid of some of the more problematic Biden executive orders already as it relates to energy and environment. And he's certainly making it clear that he's going to undo some of the harmful regulations from the Biden administration. He's also, I think, one thing that's jumped out for a lot of people is he's directed the EPA to revisit the endangerment finding. And the endangerment finding is a kind of the underpinning of greenhouse gas regulation. So if you kind of revisit the endangerment finding and you decide that greenhouse gases don't endanger public health, safety, or welfare, then it makes it very difficult. At that point, you can't regulate greenhouse gases. It's going to be a big challenge to establish that greenhouse gases don't endanger public health or welfare, but I do believe it's something that can be done, and the Trump administration is directing the EPA to revisit that issue. So that's exciting.
Yeah, a lot has happened, as you said, and obviously there was a lot on the agenda. You wrote a piece last week that people can read at CEI.org, kind of laying some of this out. President Trump should revoke these seven energy and environmental executive orders, seven of them in there from, I believe they were all from the Biden administration. Maybe one of them was older than that, that the Trump team should take a look at. There was a lot to dig through here, and there was also that late last minute drilling ban that Biden put in place. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I wrote a piece last week, and I listed seven executive orders, and actually all seven of them have been revoked or, you know, rescinded. So that's good. And they're basically, on the, this includes, like, on the first day of office for President Biden, he had a permit. He revoked the permit for the Keystone Pipeline. He created all kinds. He rejoined the Paris Agreement. So Trump has gotten rid of a lot of these executive orders. Also, there's issues relating to, like, climate risk and the SEC type of rules relating to financial disclosure. All those things, the Trump administration has repealed the rule, the executive orders that Biden had as it relates to those types of issues. So that was exciting. The Biden administration near the end, basically removed over about 625 million acres of ocean from offshore drilling. Pretty astonishing thing to do last second. And now we know we have to see what happens with the Trump administration as how to deal with what Biden has done. Trump has some executive orders to open up some more areas, but we'll see. I don't think that anything has been done expressly to kind of reverse what Biden has done yet, but we'll see.
We're talking with Darren Baxt, he's a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the director of their Center for Energy and Environment. Something that I've been thinking about, at least, as these administrations change over is, the way in which the uncertainty that existed maybe with what a Biden administration would have done if it had continued to be in there, or like how much does that tamp down, how much does that change the way companies and organizations go about their day-to-day business versus this, what they expect now, I guess, under a Trump administration?
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem. It's unpredictable. It's difficult to kind of invest. And then, even when Biden kind of takes actions that don't necessarily take, like have the immediate effect of blocking offshore drilling, it really does signal to industry not to invest in a certain area. It affects future markets. It kind of disincentivizes future development for offshore drilling or any type of drilling on public lands, et cetera. So it definitely has an effect, and you have these wild swings in policy. What really needs to happen is Congress is a bigger ask, but Congress needs to amend existing law to try to create some predictability. But more than predictability, we need to stop giving so much discretion to the agencies so they can just create so much sweeping policy changes. And that's what's happening is the Biden administration just made very radical policy changes, such as the de facto EV mandate. And, the Trump administration is pushing back, and it's clear that they're going to get rid of that. But you see these wild swings, not just for companies, but just for individual Americans and families as to how they're going to live their lives and what kind of cars they're going to drive and whether or not they're going to have affordable electricity in the future. So, we've got to create some more predictability and actually make sure that we have sound, sensible policy.
Yeah, I think that's just such a great point. We can say, and I think it's certainly true that a Trump administration will be better on a lot of regulatory issues than the Biden administration was. But of course, better still would be some sort of permanent situation established by Congress so everybody can know, okay, this is clearly the law of the land going forward. Like you said, Darren, good luck with that because Congress, doesn't do a whole lot of anything these days, but that's certainly what we should hope for. We're unfortunately out of time for today. Darren Baxt from CEI, thanks for taking some time with us.
Thank you.
And once again, that is Darren Baxt, senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Check out his work and their fine work a lot of different issues on regulatory issues in particular at CEI.org. For Reason Magazine, I'm Eric Boehm. Stay on top of everything happening with the new administration and around the rest of the country as well by checking us out online at Reason.com and catch me right back here next week on another edition of American Radio Journal.
The Biden administration has embroiled the United States in an international minimum tax grab. Donald Trump has put a halt to it. So says Jonathan Williams from the American Legislative Exchange Council on this American Radio Journal commentary.
On his first day in office, President Donald Trump took decisive action to defend American businesses, workers, and tax competitiveness by signing two executive orders that directly challenged a dangerous global corporate tax scheme. This tax deal was crafted by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, and was signed under President Joe Biden in 2021, but the provisions were not ratified by Congress. The deal threatened to undermine the tax advantages American companies enjoy and would have imposed a uniform global tax regime that hurt job creators and nations trying to foster economic growth through low taxes. President Trump's executive actions delivered a clear message. The United States will stand firm on competitive tax policy and will not be coerced into participating in a tax system that stifles growth, damages sovereignty, and threatens tax competition. Prior to President Trump's election, the other nations participating in the agreement were set to increase taxes on American companies by 2026. The Biden tax deal was structured around two key components. The first would raise taxes on the world's largest corporations, which in practice would disproportionately affect American businesses. The second component involved a global minimum business tax rate of 15%, meaning that any multinational company that operates in countries with lower taxes would face additional taxes imposed by participating nations. This global tax minimum would have effectively undermined the ability of nations to set their own tax policies and stifled international tax competition. Had this plan been implemented, it would have raised taxes on American companies, especially those that operate in countries with more favorable tax regimes, such as Ireland. These nations have long used low corporate tax rates to encourage investment and job creation, benefiting from tax competition that drives economic growth. Just as we did in the United States after the passage of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, or the Trump Tax Cuts, which lowered corporate taxes from 35% to 21% and produced a groundswell of wage growth and economic activity as companies invested more in America. Tax competition, which encourages nations to offer lower tax rates to attract businesses, has long been a crucial factor in fostering economic growth and dynamism. The United States itself benefits from internal tax competition among its states, as we document annually in the ALEC report, Rich States, Poor States. By allowing each state to set its own tax rules and rates and fiscal policies, our system of federalism fosters healthy competition that drives innovation, improves efficiency, and ultimately benefits all of us as individual taxpayers. If the federal government were to impose a single, rigid tax policy on all 50 states with a minimum tax rate, it would certainly undermine this competitive dynamic and harm economic growth, especially for states like Texas and Florida, the states looking to get it right when it comes to free market economics. The Biden global tax deal sought to accomplish a similar centralization of tax policy on an international scale. The consequences of a global tax deal like this can already be seen within the European Union, where excessive taxation and burdensome regulations have led to economic stagnation. The Eurozone economy has grown by a mere 7% over the past 15 years, compared to 82% in the United States. This stark contrast highlights the dangers of centralized tax policies that discourage competition and stifle economic potential. When countries are forced to implement policies that hinder competitiveness, the result is less opportunity, fewer jobs, and a lower standard of living for all. These two executive orders by President Trump effectively put the OECD nations on notice. The United States will now allow itself to be swept into global tax regime that undermines its competitiveness. By standing firm on these issues, President Trump protected American businesses from a tax scheme that would have hurt them both directly and indirectly. He also sent a message to other nations that may consider adopting pro-growth tax policies. The United States will support tax competition and will not allow international agreements to undermine the ability of countries to adopt policies that foster economic growth. In the long run, President Trump's executive orders help ensure that the United States remains a competitive force in the global economy. Alongside regulatory relief from the Trump administration and pro-growth tax cuts as part of the discussion around the renewal of the 2017 Trump tax cuts, 2025 could be a banner year for enhancing American competitiveness, which of course is good for all hardworking taxpayers across America. For more information, you can go to alec.org. For American Radio Journal, I'm Jonathan Williams. Thanks for listening.
American Radio Journal is heard on public affairs-minded radio stations all across the country, including WJXY AM and FM in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, along with WOND AM in Linwood, New Jersey. American Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, which underwrite the costs of this program. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. Learn more about American Radio Journal and hear expanded versions of some interviews aired on this program. Please visit our website, AmericanRadioJournal.com. I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to American Radio Journal. American Radio Journal, lighting the brush fires of freedom.